Hello, everybody. Welcome to Men of the Scarlet and Gray Live, a very special edition this week as we focus on the game against the team up north. As always, your host, Josh Schott. We're going to take a special two-part look this week at the game with a couple different guests. And our first part of our podcast this week, I'll introduce him in a second, very special guest. Of course, as always, joined by Men of the Scarlet and Gray Riders, Chip, Jeremiah, and Shannon. Shannon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good now. The power and the internet's back on, thanks to the hard work of the electricians outside.
It's good to hear. Good to hear. I had some high winds down my way today too, so that's good. Everyone's got power. Jeremiah, how are you doing today?
Great. Down here in Houston today, it was 68 degrees and sunny, no humidity. It was perfect.
It was 68 here too.
Chip, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity to be on this podcast. And as Shannon said, it is 68 degrees. Now, granted, I'm indoors, so that's kind of how I equate that it's 68 degrees.
Exactly.
Works for me. Enough about us. I want to introduce our special guest here in part one of the podcast. He was a defensive lineman on the Ohio State Buckeyes in the mid-90s. He played in the NFL. One of the best defensive linemen to come through the Ohio State football program here in the last couple of decades, Matt Finkus, joining us. Matt, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and talking with us today.
Oh, no problem, guys.
Great to have you on, Matt. Great to have you on. First, we got to ask you about this year's football team. They're right in the thick of the playoff hunt. Only one loss coming into the game. Got to be playing the Big Ten Championship game next weekend against either Minnesota or Wisconsin. What's your thoughts on this team, overall thoughts?
I think it's been a pretty good season. And when you look at what left last year, and there were a lot of question marks, especially on the offensive side with the offensive line, you know, losing four starters. Then you lose Braxton Miller 10 days before the season opener. We didn't know that JT Barrett was going to be any good. Obviously, he is good. But there were just a lot of questions. You lose kind of the number one go-to guy in Philly Brown. And I think that the positive thing that I can see that has happened with this team every single week has been improvement. I mean, you've been able to see the progression, offensive line, JT Barrett. And even that these guys kind of grow every week and get better and better. Now, you know, they've had some issues and bumps along the way. But I think that people don't realize, or what gets glossed over, is I think that there are only four or five seniors starting on this football team, significant playing time. One of the youth on this team is something that I think, and I think that has led to this improvement. Going up to Minnesota, then the game against Indiana last week.
So, Matt, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the team that you are on. What's your fondest memory of that team, and how could you give these guys the advice for this week that they would have going into this game against that team from up north?
It was funny. I saw a tweet the other day that, there's a generation of Ohio State fans that don't know what it's like to have their heart broken against Michigan. And, I mean, it's absolutely a decade at least, probably even more than that if you go back into the 80s or you could dip into the 60s and 70s for teams that had their heart broken against Michigan. I mean, you can go back to the 69 team as one of Woody's best teams of all time that lost to Michigan. There's a lot of that, and I think that these guys witnessed a little bit of it last year in that game. I mean, a completely overmatched team, a team that shouldn't have been on the same field with you, and they came out with a totally revamped offense and a game plan that no one had ever seen before, and kind of thrown people off guard. And that's what this game is all about. I mean, when it gets down to this time of the year, when Ohio State or Michigan is eyeing a title, is eyeing a playoff, is eyeing a conference championship or a national title berth or a Rose Bowl berth, and the other team is on the outside looking in. You know, we were in that position in 94. I mean, we had three losses coming into the game and, looked at that Michigan team that was sitting there, and I think they were maybe in the top 10, and they were looking for a piece of the Big Ten title, and it was our year to play the spoiler. And just for guys to kind of realize that, I mean, this game is one of those games that careers are made on and careers are lost on. And I don't think that that guys, have had that experience yet, and you don't want to. I mean, not the saying that I want to bring those things back, but you've got to be aware of them or they will come back and bite you.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that.
The question I had for you, Matt, is, or one of many, obviously I don't want to take up too much of your time and steal time away from my friends here in terms of, I'm sure they've got tons of questions, but obviously you played for Coach Cooper. You experienced, you know, like the both sides, the positives and the negatives, as you just kind of alluded to. I guess the question I have is, best you can, as best you can for our listeners, as well as for, you know, fans such as ourselves, what do you see the big differences in terms of, you know, how Coach Cooper, you know, prepared your team for the game versus as best as you could describe, like how Coach Trussell prepared the team for the game and as well as you understand, like how Coach Meyer prepares the team for the game?
I think that, you know, and obviously Coach Cooper has been on record as saying that, you know, he viewed this as another game. And I think that was the downfall. I mean, that just, you know, preparing for it like it's another week, you know, just planning to go out and run your offense and run your defense. And, you know, I don't think anything was more evident than in that 96 game. I talked to Marcus Ray, you know, multiple times. And, you know, we're sitting around having a beer, and I asked him, like, how the hell did you guys, you know, in 95 I could, you know, they had a great game plan, and you knew how that happened. I mean, you know, they came out with a play that we couldn't make adjustments to, and that's how they won that game. But 96, you know, it was inexplicable. I mean, why our offense couldn't move the ball, and why we couldn't get in the end zone. And I asked him, I was like, you know, what the hell did they say to you guys? And he said, you know, bluntly, Lloyd Carr told them on Monday, said, this team, this Ohio State team is better than you. They're better than you. They have better players. They are a better team than you. But if you believe in me and believe in what I'm about to do, we can beat them. I promise you that. I mean, and those guys bought into it. I mean, and if you look, go back and look at those games. I mean, that's why, you know, Lloyd Carr, I think, was one of the best Michigan coaches to be unceremoniously, you know, thrown out of that job, because he did an unbelievable job of motivating that team. And, you know, I mean, it's just, when you look back, I mean, it was that struggle. I mean, and I think that Trussell and Urban both, you know, they prepare for this game differently. They prepare for it with a ton of emphasis. You know, I think that like I said, and Coops even admitted to this, that, you know, I mean, he felt like he understood the rivalry too late. Once he understood it, and once he grasped the concept, the damage had been done, so to speak. You know, I mean, all those losses had piled up, and it was a hard time to dig himself out of that hole. And, you know, part of that is being a guy from Tulsa and you know, coaching at Tulsa and Arizona State. You know, I mean, Urban and Jim Trussell both, you know, for lack of a better term, grew up in this rivalry. I mean, they know what it means. They know what it's like to be part of this and to be part of something that's bigger than yourselves, and they prepare that way. And it's a tangible difference. I mean, there's not just the way that they talk about it, not just the way that they practice during the week, but the way that they, you know, the way that it is, the attitude is carried. It is a 24/7, 365 kind of an affair. And I think was our coach. You know, you thought about the Michigan game, and really that was when you thought about it, and that's when you prepared for it. And you saw it with Trussell, and you see it with Urban, that it's a focus year round now, and it's got to be. I mean, if you're going to be successful, I mean, that's the weight of this game, that it carries so much importance and so much weight, you know, not just that year, but absolutely in a historic fashion. That, I mean, it's how you're remembered, it's how you're measured, it's everything, and it's being a part of something that is so much bigger than yourself that you can't just prepare for it during the week.
Something that you just said kind of spurred a second question, and that is, you mentioned how I think you were having a beer with Marcus Ray, and
yeah.
You know, prior to you joining the podcast, you know, Shannon and I, and you know, we were discussing the 1996 team, the Big Ten Network special that was on last night, and you were a part of that. And, you know, I think the question that I have, and it just kind of made me think of it, I believe Kirk Herbstreit in the past has talked about, you know, the fact that, you know, Ohio State and Michigan players, there's a tremendous amount of intensity and a lot of, you know, toughness and everything that goes into the game, into what makes it the best rivalry in sports. And the fact that you, I guess, you said about having a beer with Marcus Ray, but, you know, off the field, the ability to, you know, like to, like you said, have a beer, kind of, I don't want to say friendship, but have like a, you know, like a decent, you know, friendly relationship, so to speak. Last year, the game was marred with, you know, the ejection of Dontre Wilson and Marcus Hall and, you know, a fight that was instigated you know, by that team up north. I mean, what are your thoughts on, I mean, what kind of, I'm not asking, you know, like you to necessarily, you know, say like, oh, that everything was all, you know, like hugs and kisses, because I know that's not the case, like on the line of scrimmage and, you know, but, you know, what was your perspective on the players being ejected last year during the game? Like, could you have any of those kind of things ever happen during the games that you participated in?
Intense rivalry, and it's built on mutual respect. I mean, you can't have a rivalry that meaningful as Ohio State Michigan without a respect for the rivalries. I mean, if you don't respect the other team that you're playing, then, you know, then you're playing Purdue. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter anymore if you don't respect the other team. And you know, from that standpoint, I mean, you know, you do. I mean, and you never want to see guys get in a fight and you know, take things on. But, I mean, you go back to the days where we played and, you know, David Boston and, you know, guys barking back and forth and, you know, those guys dancing on the O in 96. I mean, it's, you know, there's but that's part of a healthy rivalry. I mean, when you take things too far is when you happen like, while it's great for the fans to be a part of, again, the rivalry is built on respect. And that's why I can go out and have a beer with Marcus Ray now, because, you know, there's that HBO special about the, you know, they're talking and after they both got done coaching, how they stayed great friends, because, you know, who else could understand you? I mean, I think that's true of a lot of the players understands what that game played in it. I mean, there's a level of, and, you know, yeah, Marcus can call me and forth this week on things, but respect, and it's respect for guys that those Saturdays wanted to tear your head off.
Excuse me. I got a question about, are you glad that there wasn't such thing as like Twitter, Facebook, and, you know, social media when you were playing?
I am ecstatic that these things did not exist when I played. The camera phones were not around when I played or anything like that. It is a blessing, believe me.
I had a question. I mean, I know obviously with you played on the defensive line with Mike Vrabel and Luke Fickell, I guess. You know, can you kind of elaborate on, obviously, I mean, you know, Ohio State fans remember, obviously, of Mike Vrabel as an assistant coach the last few years, and obviously Luke Fickell is still a member of that coaching staff. Like, how often do you, you know, talk to those guys? How often do you see each other? Like, what kind of, you know, in terms of, you know, now that all three of your respective playing careers have ended, like, what, you know, how often do you guys get to hang out and just kind of talk about the good old days?
You know, during, it's tough. You know, I talk with Mike there, but during the season, it is, you know, I mean, those guys are so busy. I stop under the Woody Hayes, you know, every once in a while, and I'll sit down and talk to Luke a little bit. But it's tough. I mean, with their schedules in the off season, now that Mike is in the NFL, it's a lot easier to connect with him, just because their schedule, you know, they're not out recruiting or doing anything like that.
Thank you to Matt Finkus for joining us here on Men of the Scarlet and Gray Live. We certainly enjoyed talking to him in part one of the podcast. Unfortunately, we couldn't talk to him any longer due to technical issues, but we're certainly thankful for the little time he's able to give us, and we certainly enjoyed it. As we now go into part two of the podcast, where we introduce another guest to the show, team up North blogger, Michigan blogger, Anthony Broom, joining us from SB Nation Maize and Brew, contributor there. Anthony, thank you for taking time out of your schedule tonight to join us here and talk about the game.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Before we get talking about the game, though, we would like to talk about the current situation surrounding the football program. It's not something that's hidden or everyone knows about. The football program has been going through a lot of turmoil this year. Dave Brandon finally stepping down. Brady Hoke, pretty much a lame duck at this point. Would you agree? He doesn't seem to be returning next year. What's the current vibe around the program now that Brandon's gone and Hoke's pretty much a lame duck?
Well, it's, I mean, there are definitely dark times in Ann Arbor right now. You know, the last 3 years have not really gone the way they wanted to, really, at all. The vibe in Ann Arbor right now definitely is that this seems like this will be the swan song weekend for Brady Hoke and staff, and who better than you guys, the Buckeyes, to put the nail in the coffin. So it's certainly looking that way, and it's, you know, not a lot of good is going on, but this does look like the end for Brady Hoke.
Now, I have to ask you, did it surprise you it took so long to get rid of Brandon?
Not really, because there were a lot of legalities involved with it. You know, regardless of some of the problems that the football program has had, you know, he did do a very good job of bringing some other kind of events to the program. They hosted the Winter Classic this summer, and, you know, he did do a lot of positive things. But at the end of the day, the biggest moneymaker was the football program. And, you know, the way that a lot of the things have been handled, it does fall on him and the management of everything. And it was the first step into, you know, turning things around for good, hopefully.
Do you envision any possible way, if Hoke wins this game on Saturday, that they would keep him going forward?
If the Buckeyes don't show up, probably. I mean, I kind of have the same feeling going into this game Saturday as last year's game, where it really didn't seem like they had much of a chance. But, you know, we all know what happened last year, and, you know, it definitely put a scare into Ohio State. But, I mean, at least that team had shown some glimpses of promise last year. I mean, it started out bad for them this year, and it's continued to get worse. So I really don't see how there's any way it happens.
But if it somehow a miracle happened, do you think that would be any way that would be able to save Hoke's job?
I don't believe so. Just the vibe around the university this week has been, you know, it does seem like he may already have been told that this will be it for him, and I think it's a foregone conclusion that Brady Hoke will be coaching his last game on Saturday.
Anthony, I'm curious. All right, a real simple question. Are you a graduate or a student at Michigan, or?
I'm actually a student at Central Michigan University.
Okay.
I've been a Michigan fan, followed the program, you know, pretty much my whole life. So, you know, not necessarily. I don't have as much invested as, you know, alumni or students do, but, you know, I've been pretty close with the program for a while, and it hasn't been very encouraging this year at all, really. So,
no, I mean, I guess the reason I was going to ask is, you know, Ohio State fans, and I think college football fans in general, hear all the time about the whole, you know, Michigan man mantra that Coach Schembechler talked about, you know, many years ago. So I guess the first question I have is, in the event that Coach Hoke is fired, is it going to be a Michigan man or bust? You know, like, does it have to be Jim Harbaugh or Les Miles, or is it possible, I mean, to bring in somebody that's not a quote-unquote Michigan man?
I think it is. The message that the new school president has put out there is that, you know, at least in regards to the athletic director search, they're looking for the right person for the job. And in the case of the next coach, the right person for the job, you know, is a Michigan man. You know, I think it's everyone, you know, anytime any coaching job opens up, Jim Harbaugh's name is one of the first to come up. So the fact that he is a Michigan man helps. He definitely has ties to the university. He loves the university. But, you know, if it's not Harbaugh, I don't necessarily think it has to be someone with ties to the program. And I'm not sure that's the biggest criteria.
Do you have any – one of the other quick question I had like I said, I've got plenty of them, so I don't want to hog all the questions. But Jim Hackett, from what I understand, was supposed to be the interim athletic director, but I believe I saw something recently that he's been asked to kind of stay on for the next couple years. So is that accurate, and what kind of thoughts do you have on Jim Hackett staying on as the athletic director who will be responsible for the firing and the possible hiring of a new coach?
Well, what I've been told is that he has a handshake agreement to where he's prepared to be there as long as 2 years. They're hoping maybe they have this resolved in the next 6 months or so. But he's basically, seems like he's kind of going to head up, you know, one-man transition team, or, you know, they don't necessarily want to rush into a hire for an AD, because, you know, you want to have that guy in place for a long time. And I think that Hackett is definitely qualified to, you know, to make this decision. The president has put a lot of faith into him, and, you know, I don't know if that's the way that I would approach it. I would think they would want to get this wrapped up pretty quickly, but it definitely seems like, from the people I've talked to, that they think Hackett can do a job for, you know, the amount of time they need it to.
I get a question I'd like to ask is, do you think that the Michigan job is still a top five or top ten type coaching job in college football?
Now that Dave Brandon is gone, yes. If he was still around, I do think there's definitely some hesitation for some of those big name guys, because you know, Brandon kind of tends to, he wants to be seen and he wants to be the face of the athletic department. Well, that's not the case. I mean, anytime a big time head coach is at your school, I mean, you guys know with Urban Meyer, that's, you know, that's the face of your entire athletic department. But now that I think what they need to do now, it's still a top five job now, just based on resources. And I mean, they have a beautiful athletic complex. The big house is great. They've made a lot of good changes there. They just renovated the basketball arena. They have an awesome indoor practice facility. So I do think they have the money for it to still be considered a top five job, and they definitely have all the facilities for it.
Do you think that they're going to wait until, like, next year, you know, the beginning of next year, to fire Hoke in order to save $1 million, or do you think that they're going to let him go, like, after Buckeye game?
I do think a decision, if it doesn't come early next week, it could probably come, you know, in the next 10 to 14 days or so. I don't think, you know, it really doesn't look like they're going to be in a bowl game, so there's no, it doesn't really make sense to keep him around. You know, they have the money to pay the buyout if they have to. If Jim Harbaugh is the guy they want, you know, the guy that they're truly making a, you know, sending the all-out blitz on, they're going to have to wait till after January 1st for that, just because of his, you know, the 49ers are in the playoff hunt. It doesn't look like he's going to get fired, but, you know, it'll be at least till then before they kind of really kick up the coaching search. So I think Hope will definitely, it won't take very long for them to make a decision.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, if they're actually going to be going after Harbaugh hot and heavy, you're going to want to save a little bit of money, because I think it was John U. Bacon who came out with the report that the finances for Michigan Athletics are, you know, they're going pretty low as far as making any kind of money, so trying to come up with some money to pay Harbaugh might be tough in the beginning.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, a lot of people have said that it will probably take like $7 or $8 million to get Harbaugh here. What I've read and what I've been told is that they could probably get him, you know, more around 5.5-6, because it's not one of those blank check deals where that's what's going to take to get him here. It does seem like there's interest there. It's just a, you know, it's just a matter of getting it done, pretty much.
Is there any word out that the athletic directors at Michigan's looking to try to hire?
The hot names right now are Boston College's Brad Bates, UConn's Ward Manuel, Jeff Long from Arkansas. Even Central Michigan's athletic director has been thrown in the mix, but that's, I mean, I think they're just calling around for that. But Manuel and Bates were both guys that had ties to Bo Schembechler. They've both done great job, you know, a great job with the athletic programs at their respective schools. So those are the two names right now. But we really don't know for sure if they're prepared to let Hackett take the reins for 6 months to 2 years. That, you know, things are a little cloudy on that front right now.
I have to ask you, Anthony, regarding the coaching search, who would you personally to see take over as the new head coach, and who do you think Michigan will hire?
Well, I mean, you could definitely chalk me into the Harbaugh camp. I think definitely I would love to see what Jim Harbaugh does there. It'd be really interesting to see that him match up with, you know, Urban Meyer and Mark D'Antonio each season. You know, those are some interesting coaching personalities. And, you know, he has this swagger that, you know, Michigan hasn't really had in a coach since Bo. So that would definitely be my number one guy. I don't see Les Miles as really realistic. I think maybe if they were able to get it done with him back in 2007, that would be the time he would have made the jump. But I think, you know, he's happy at LSU right now, and I don't see that being the case. But As of right now, I would say Jim Harbaugh, but I, as far as who they will hire, if it's not Harbaugh, I really don't know. It seems there's a lot of whispers that they're putting a lot of eggs into the Harbaugh basket in Ann Arbor right now.
If it is Jim Harbaugh, and you're going to have to wait until if the 49ers make the playoffs or whatever, and you're going to be waiting a long time, Michigan's going to lose out on a lot of recruits come National Signing Day because he's not going to have that much time for recruiting. So his first year is not going to be that, you know.
Yeah, the positive thing to that would be it was going to be a small recruiting class anyways. They were probably only going to take about 14 or 15 guys. You know, they've lost a lot of guys throughout, you know, since the beginning of the football season just due to, you know, uncertainties with the staff and stuff like that. But I think they'll at least have 3 to 4 guys that'll stick around for sure. And then I think you'll see them offer a lot of, not necessarily lower tier, but a lot of their third, fourth, fifth options, in-state guys, walk-on, you know, a lot of walk-on stuff like that. So I don't really see that as a big deal for this year. I mean, I certainly think fans would trade the recruiting class for a Jim Harbaugh. So we'll see what happens.
Go, can I just ask, going into this future offseason for you guys, which probably starts Sunday, I guess. sorry about that. But just thinking about that, is a Jim Harbaugh or nothing kind of a situation? Would the fans be, you know, that's a long 9 months to wait for that next win. Would they be willing to, you know, go through that 9 months with, you know, a hire like a guy from Marshall or, you know, TCU or something like that, some, you know, lesser known name that maybe you could pull in? Is it Harbaugh or nothing, do you think?
Well, and here's where it gets interesting, because I do think to a lot of fans it is Harbaugh or nothing, but, you know, if it's not Harbaugh, which a lot of people seem to think that would be the quickest turnaround, a lot of people think it's going to be a 2 to 3 year kind of rebound process from there anyways, whether Harbaugh is there or not. So it's really just important for them to get it right, which is something, you know, they obviously haven't done the last two times. I don't know if you guys had ever heard this or read this, but when in 2010, after Rich Rod was fired, David Brandon had interviewed Kevin Sumlin, and he was one of the final two guys for the job, and obviously they went a different direction there, and we know what's happened with, you know, Texas A&M and Michigan since then. So, you know, they really just needed to do their due diligence and get it right. I think since early in the year, probably after that Minnesota game, it's been pretty obvious that it's time to start looking at other guys, and I think that they will. I think that they've got probably a list of names that they like and guys that they'll do their homework on.
Last season, offensive coordinator Al Borges was fired, but offensive line coach Daryl Funk was retained. And again, from my perspective, it seems like the offensive line as a position group just hasn't seemed to develop despite some high-profile recruits. I mean, are you surprised that Funk was retained even though they brought in Doug Nussmeier as the new offensive coordinator?
They should have fired Funk after last season. You know, they had this is the most mind-boggling thing from their offensive line play last year. They had a first-round pick in Taylor Lewan, a third-round pick in Michael Schofield, and they were still one of the worst offensive lines in the Big Ten. And it's gotten worse this year. And I don't necessarily see anything that Funk has ever done to keep his job, but, you know, that's the decision they made. And in my opinion, they made the wrong one.
Going into this game this weekend, obviously Michigan is a huge underdog going into SHU. They have to win this game to go to a bowl game if they would pull it off. What's the situation with the players, like mindsets heading into this game? Is there a chip on their shoulders? Are they kind of just trying to get to the end of the season? What's kind of the vibe going with the players?
Well, I think a lot of them are, I think a lot of them are smart enough to know that this is probably it for Hoke. Regardless of how they play on the field, they do play hard for him and they do love him. So I think there's a chance that, you know, I think they'll come out fired up on Saturday. They'll probably play up for, you know, a good, you know, maybe the first half or so, keep it close. But at the end of the day, I just don't think they've been taught well enough. I don't think they're coached well enough, and they doesn't seem like they're prepared. So maybe they come out on fire early on and make a game out of it. But based on how this season has gone, I don't see much of a chance of that happening today, or on Saturday, I should say.
These are kind of broad questions, and obviously there were mistakes made along the way. I mean, Anthony, you just said a moment ago, you know, the last two times they haven't gotten it right. So I guess I'm just asking for your perspective. What do you believe was, if obviously there were multiple mistakes, but what do you think was the biggest mistake that Dave Brandon made, and what was the biggest mistake that Brady Hoke made?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. As far as what Dave Brandon made, you would have to think it's got to be the Brady Hoke hire, which, you know, at first glance, it looked like it was going to work out for them. They went 11-2 in 2011. They went to a BCS bowl game. You know, all was well in Ann Arbor. I was in the camp when Hoke was hired that, you know, it was a safe hire. I thought it would be, at the very best, probably back to the days of, you know, 8-4, 9-3, and this turned out to be worse than that. So that was probably Brandon's biggest mistake. As far as the biggest mistake Hoke has made, you know, there have been so many blunders that have been just totally egregious and, quite frankly, pathetic. But the worst of them all has to be the way that Shane Morris situation was handled against Minnesota. That was, I mean, everybody got caught with their pants down on that one. It was sad to see a coach with a job at that level look so incompetent and have no answers and be totally undermined by his athletic director in the process.
I have to ask, going in this game, what player on the offensive side of the ball for the Buckeyes and defensive side of the ball for the Buckeyes worries you the most in terms of Michigan's matchups?
Well, offensively, I think this is going to be a JT Barrett kind of day. I think, you know, Michigan's defense has played pretty well this year, but I think Barrett has the skill players and, you know, has the arm where he'll be able to probably pick them apart pretty easily. I mean, this has been a good defense throughout the year, but it was also one that was picked apart by Gary Nova and a loss to Rutgers. So I expect to see JT Barrett have a big game. Obviously, defensively, Joey Bosa on the defensive line could present major problems. They'll probably be lined up over Mason Cole, who's a true freshman left tackle. So I think they're going to have their hands full on Saturday. So if they're able, I think there's a chance they can keep it a lower scoring game, but I don't see how the offense will be able to get it going.
What players would you need to see step up offensively and defensively for the Wolverines to pull off the upset in Columbus?
Well, first and foremost, I think Devin Gardner really needs to put it together and probably have a similar type of effort that he did last year in the game. And another guy that, you know, he's been disappointing this year is Devin Funchess. You know, they gave him the number one jersey, which, you know, I never really agreed with that either. And, you know, he's been prone to drops. You know, lack of effort has been an issue with him as well. So, you know, those are definitely the big two. So they need to find some kind of running game. But those guys need to get the passing game going. But it hasn't happened this year, so I don't, you know, I'd be surprised if it did Saturday. But, you know, we've seen crazier things, you know, when these two teams get together.
How frustrating is it, in your opinion, for Michigan fans to know that Braxton Miller went down, JT Barrett had 2 weeks before the season started, and then he's put in the season that he has put in, and compare that to what Devin Gardner, who's a fifth-year senior, has done, and to see that the Ohio State had to replace their entire offensive line except for one guy and replace the second-round NFL draft pick and running back and their two leading receivers from last year, and still be able to put up the numbers that they have this year. Is that a sense of frustration, knowing that Ohio State is your biggest rival and you know, who you compare yourselves to both ways every year? You know, Ohio State compares themselves to Michigan and Michigan to Ohio State. How difficult is it then to know that Ohio State was able to just revamp and build up this season as much as they did?
Well, I think it really speaks to, you know, just the program that Urban Meyer has built and, you know, the system that he has there. I mean, it's, you know, plug a guy anywhere and they seem to produce, and that's been, you know, what he does. He develops players, and, you know, you get a JT Barrett who basically comes off of 2 weeks of preparation before the year and, you know, arguably the best quarterback in the conference now. That is a source of frustration because Michigan has, they have done well on the recruiting trail. They brought in a lot of 4- and 5-star guys, and, you know, not only have they not really developed in their time, but they seem to have taken, you know, definitely regressed too. So that's definitely, I mean, it almost seems like Michigan is the anti-Ohio State right now. You know, they don't develop players. If someone gets hurt, there's not really someone there to replace them. And, you know, they don't get better, and they're not coaching very well. I think that's something that you'll see played out on Saturday as well.
The rumors, I guess, I'm not sure if these are true or not, so you can either shoot them down or say, yeah, there's something to this. Rumors that I have read that that Coach Carr was not in favor of Les Miles being brought in when Coach Carr stepped down. I read John Bacon's book, The Three and Out, about the struggles that Rich Rodriguez had, and supposedly Coach Carr was behind the scenes not very supportive of Rich Rodriguez. So I guess the question I have, you know, what role or impact does Coach Carr have within the athletic department despite retiring after the 2007 season, excuse me?
I definitely think when it came to these last two coaching hires that he has had a bit of a voice. You know, as far as confirming or denying whether he didn't like Coach Miles or not, I don't have that much knowledge on the situation. I haven't really talked to anyone who's confirmed that. But, you know, we've all heard the same things here. It does seem kind of odd because, you know, Lloyd Carr does seem like a pretty even keel guy, and, you know, he's very supportive of the football program, and his family is very supportive of that. Yeah, I mean, if it's true, it's too bad. You definitely want to see everyone on the same page in the athletic department, and, you know, that's really where Michigan's biggest problem is, you know, there seems to be two sides to every coin of every decision that gets made, and it's a problem, and that's why they need to get this AD thing figured out so they have a leader in that department that can kind of bring everyone back together.
I have to ask you about, I was reading about him earlier this season, midway through the season. I haven't looked recently, so excuse me if it's been an update or something on him, but Jabril Peppers, one of your top recruits coming in the season, obviously very much heralded. He played a lot earlier in the season. What's the situation with him?
A couple weeks ago, Brady Hoke did announce that he was done for the year, and they are going to redshirt him. So he will have a fifth year of eligibility. It's really too bad that an injury like that, you know, it was a knee or some kind of leg injury that took place in their first game against, you know, Appalachian State. So Jabril Peppers should be back next year. He will be back, but he'll have an extra year of eligibility.
Because I remember reading about him, correct me if I'm wrong, this is another rumor I heard, was he was having trouble with, he was having conflicts with the coaching staff, and that was the reason why he wasn't playing earlier this season. Obviously, he ended up getting injured. But was there tension between him and the coaching staff?
I don't believe there was or has been throughout the year. He's visibly limped when he's been on the sidelines all year, even just, you know, wearing street clothes, and, you know, people have seen him on campus kind of, you know, laboring around. So I do think it was a worse injury than was led on to at first. And, you know, there were rumors that he wanted to transfer, and he shot those all down. And, you know, I don't see Jabril Peppers leaving or, you know, he has a good head on his shoulders. I don't see him leaving or being the type of player that would be arguing with the coaching staff.
Devin Gardner's had his struggles, not just this season, but throughout his career. And a few moments ago, you mentioned, you know, Shane Morris, the issue that developed during the Minnesota game and how that impacted the season. So I guess my question is, you know, what does the quarterback position group or the situation look like for 2015? Will Shane Morris go into the season as the projected starter? Is there a recruit waiting in the wings to seize the job after Devin Gardner departs?
Well, it's going to be interesting, that's for sure. You know, Shane Morris will be there. They'll have Wilton Spate, who was a 4-star guy that they've decided to redshirt for this year, who actually, he had a pretty good spring practice, or you know, spring practice and training camp. So he'll definitely be in the mix. As far as a recruit that could come in, they have one quarterback committed for 2015, and that's he's a four-star kid, Alex Nelzone. He plans on enrolling early, and you know, it would not surprise me to see him get some looks in that battle too. He throws a good ball, he makes quick decisions, and you know, he looks like he'll be a good fit in a pro-style offense if that's what the next coach decides to run. So the quarterback will be a huge question mark next year, but I think they have a group of guys that, you know, if they get the right guy in here to coach them up, I think it may not be an issue come fall.
Before we move on to talking about the game this weekend and your prediction, Anthony, you guys, Chip or Shannon and Jeremiah, do you guys have any questions, more questions before we move on to that?
Yeah, I have a question. I think this is a legitimate question. Whatever happened to those hashtag Fire Dave Brandon t-shirts that were supposed to be unveiled? I mean, like, were they sent to the same country as the 2006 and 2007 Ohio State National Championship t-shirts, or whatever happened to those things?
I don't know, but to be honest with you, I would not mind getting my hands on one just for novelty's sake. I don't know where they're at. So they were supposed to I believe it was for the Indiana game. They were supposed to do the whiteout Fire Dave Brandon, you know, day at the stadium. And, you know, obviously Dave Brandon stepped down the day before that. So I have no idea where those shirts are. And I'd love to get my hands on one, though.
How does it feel to lose the attendance crown to your rival?
Well, I'll say this. I'm surprised that it's as close as it is, because they said it's only about, the difference has only been about 1,000 seats per game. I was at a game earlier this year. I've seen, you know, I've seen pictures of all the games, and Michigan, there's a couple games where I'm not sure Michigan had 100,000 there. So I mean, it's definitely not something to be proud about. And the fact that their main rival has the record for the year now, it's, you know, just more salt in the wound. It's been just a crappy year.
Do you guys have any more questions?
No, I'm still anxiously awaiting to see one of those hashtag Fire Dave Brandon t-shirts. But
I will do some digging.
Anthony, I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, so I got to ask you, Anthony, what do you think is going to happen in this game, and your final score prediction?
Well, like I said earlier, I could see Michigan playing up early on. You know, it's a team that really doesn't have much to lose, so you know, I could see it maybe being a 24-13 game going into the fourth quarter, and maybe OSU tacks one on at the end. But on the surface, I don't see how they can score against OSU, and I don't see how they can stop OSU from scoring. So I don't expect it to be pretty.
I'll go to you, Shannon, first for your score predictions before I get to Jeremiah and Chip. How do you think this game turns out, and is it going to be close? You think it's going to be a blowout?
I don't know. I mean, statistically, yes, Ohio State should blow that team up north out of the water. But I just, growing up, watching games in the 80s and 90s and seeing my heart ripped out, there's always that fear that, you know, Bianca Batuka is going to come running out and just destroy us for 300 yards. So, I mean, I'm going to go conservative. And you know what happens when I go conservative. So I'm going to go 24-17 Ohio State.
Jeremiah, your final score prediction and what you think is going to happen, and who's going to be the key guys in this game?
Yeah, for me, I mean, statistically, this is only the second worst offense that Ohio State's faced this year. Penn State is a much worse offense than Michigan's. They're not a very good offense. But, you know, I think what will happen here is the Buckeyes will be able to shut down their offense pretty much the entire game. I think they'll get 13 points. The Buckeyes will struggle on offense a little bit because of how good the defense is for Michigan. So I think it'll be somewhere in the range of 31-13 Ohio State wins.
Chip, how you think the game will play out, and your final score prediction?
Well, I'm going to be more in the same camp as Shannon. Again, you know, just I have so many painful memories of the 1980s and 1990s where everything looked so much to be in Ohio State's favor, and inexplicably and painfully and regrettably it turned out completely against Ohio State. You know, I guess I'm irreparably scarred from the 1990s, so I've learned never to take the game lightly.
Yes.
You know, if people have not seen the Big Ten Network special about the 1996 Ohio State team, I suggest you do so if you can prior to Saturday. I'm certainly hoping that Coach Meyer is screening that, and Coach Fickell is you know, as somebody who played in that game, somebody who has coached a number of times in the game, you know, is really emphasizing do not take the rival lightly. I agree with something that Chris Spielman said, and that there is a tremendous amount of talent on this team. I think Jeremiah would agree, and there's a number of players that both Ohio State and our rival actively recruited. Based on, I did some quick estimates using like rivals.com. I think there are about 25 players who turned down Ohio State, you know, several Ohioans. You know, we already talked about like Kyle Kalis and, you know, but players like DeMonte Thomas and Chris Wormley, Taco Charlton. So Greg Madison, I think, is going to have that defense ready. That's going to keep the Wolverines in the game until late in the second half. I'm going to say Ohio State 35, our rival is going to have 17, and I'm looking for Ohio State to pull away late. But I don't think it's going to be. I think anyone who thinks that Ohio State's going to cover that 20-point spread, I think is. Even last year, I thought that the spread was way too high, and everyone can remember it came down to a 2-point conversion that fortunately Tyvis Powell was there to intercept. But I think it's going to be 35-17 Ohio State.
Well, being that I'm the youngest of the four Buckeye people on this podcast, I obviously don't have any memories of my own of the 80s and 90s, but I am well aware of the history of the game. And I know it's always closer than it should be. I mean, there's years where Michigan's the heavy favorite, Ohio State's pulled off the upset, and it's been the other way too. However, I think this will definitely be close for a half. Absolutely. The turnover problem the Buckeyes have been experienced the last 2 weeks, that just doesn't go away real quick. Hopefully it does. It's been an issue. It's been driving me nuts. I think Barrett either throws a pick six or something in the first half, or there's a fumble. It scares the crap out of the Buckeyes. It'll be a close game to have. I think the Buckeyes, though, will make the right adjustments at the halftime. They'll shut Michigan out in the second half, and I think the final score is going to be 48-17 Buckeyes. I think they do cover the spread. I know it's going to make some of you guys a little nervous, me making that pick, but I just the Buckeyes have more talent. They're a better team. It's in the horseshoe. I'd be a lot more nervous if this was in Ann Arbor, but I think because the game is in Columbus, I have a lot of faith in the Buckeyes to win this comfortably in the end.
I'm just hoping that with that team up north having the pastry chef at behind, you know, under center coming into a horseshoe, that he's going to have more turnovers than Ohio State.
That's very possible. I would not rule that out at all. In fact, we've seen it far too often this year with Michigan.
Well, yeah, he's got, what, 14 interceptions to 8 touchdowns?
Yeah, it's
in conference play.
It's been terrible. There's no sugarcoating how awful the offense has been. So I definitely think the Buckeyes will get their, you know, their share of turnovers, and you know, we'll see what happens. If Ohio State can take care of the football, 48-17 sounds about right.
The game is always interesting. So I mean, our predictions could be completely off, or they could be spot on. You never know with these rivalry games, and that's why it's always fun this weekend. Not just watching Ohio State, Michigan, but there'll be all kinds of rivalry games across college football. So it's gonna be a fun weekend to be a college football fan, I think. So as we wrap up the show, just want to remind you to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter. We're all on Twitter. And you subscribe to us on iTunes. There's a link on the site for that. You can also type in the search box, MOTSAG Live on iTunes. You'll come right up, so you can subscribe. We're also on Stitcher the same exact way. Type in the search box, MOTSAG Live. We come right up, subscribe through that. And we'll have it on the site, of course, later tonight. And before we sign off, I definitely want to take a moment to thank our special guest, Anthony Broom, writer for the Maize and Brew SB Nation Network. Thank you, Anthony. You can follow him on Twitter at Anthony T. Broom. And thank you for joining us. You were very informative, and we'd love to have you on a future podcast again.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Enjoyed being on. Like talking about the game, you know, regardless of how it may end up. So thank you again for having me on.
Thanks for being on, and if you could hook me up with one of those T-shirts, if you find one, I take an XL.
Okay? I will get right to that, my friend.
I appreciate that. Hey, and I want to wish you good luck only to a certain point. this weekend. Okay.
Just pray for my liver. That's what I need.
So. I'll pray for yours and mine. How's that?
That's what I was gonna say.
There you go.
Thanks there for coming on the show. Much appreciated.
Yeah, no problem, fellas.
Thanks a lot, Anthony.
Yes, thank you a lot, Anthony. We certainly appreciate it. Reiterate again. Remember, next week we're on same time as always. Before we sign off, I wanted to get your guys' final thoughts. Jeremiah, Chip, Shannon, we'll start with you, Shannon. Your final thoughts.
Just everybody remember, you know, this is a special week, kegs and eggs, and don't drink and drive. Come home in one piece. Enjoy the weekend. Don't be like me last year and be involved in be at a bar where a fight breaks out. You know, keep your head about you and have some fun.
Jeremiah, your final thoughts?
I just hope that the students, the fans get to enjoy this week as much as I have my entire life. It's one of those things that unless you've been in it and lived through it, you just don't understand the rivalry as much as you can. So just enjoy every part of it. You know, go for the blood drive. Help beat Michigan in the blood drive. You know, go to the kegs and eggs. Go, you know, every bit of it. Go to Skull Session. Enjoy this. There'll be 250,000 people around the stadium on Saturday. Go live it up. Enjoy this. Make this a special moment in your life because you'll remember it forever.
Chip, your final thoughts?
Well, I want to echo what Jeremiah and Shannon both said in regards to enjoying the moment. You know, I was not an Ohio State student, but I seemed to, when I lived in Columbus many years ago, seemed to find myself to some of the establishments that we were talking about, you know, in terms of like with the kegs and eggs. And I realized, I believe the Mirror Lake jump is happening either tonight or tomorrow. So, you know, to kind of echo what Shannon said, you know, be safe, be smart, you know, don't drink and drive. And considering that this is, we are recording this prior to Thanksgiving, I want to wish each and every one of my colleagues here on the podcast, as well as our listeners, a safe and happy and blessed Thanksgiving weekend. I'm truly grateful for not only for the game and all that it entails, but you know, the opportunity to do this podcast on a weekly basis during the football season. It's been tremendous. Looking forward to talking about the Big Ten Championship next week. But hope everyone really enjoys and takes a moment to find something to be grateful for this Thanksgiving holiday weekend.
Yes, thank you for reminding me of that, Chip. Reiterate, as you just said, Chip, happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners out there. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys. Hope everyone has a happy and safe Thanksgiving. This Thursday, don't eat too much turkey, and go Bucks this weekend. It's going to be a fun weekend of college football. We'll be back next weekend, as always, recording on Tuesday nights, and it'll be available later tonight, of course. And we'll be talking about the Ohio State's matchup in the Big Ten Championship against either Minnesota or Nebraska. So we'll find out who plays in that game. And college football is going to be fun this weekend. I enjoyed the podcast. Going to enjoy college football this weekend. So as always, your host, Josh Schott. Thanks for listening to Scarlet and Gray Live. And be sure to subscribe to us. And Shannon, you play us off.
Go Bucks!
Go Bucks!
Go Bucks! Okay.
From Ohio.
Oh,
from Ohio. Oh, hey.